I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a conference finals week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
And it's a 5-on-4 for the Thunder. Down the lane, Holmgren. Oh, what a jam with the right hand of a bounce pass from Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brandon Sprague, conference finals week on The Fan is brought to you by Video Only. For the best deals on Samsung, LG, and Sony TVs, shop Video Only, or you'll be sorry. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 FM and 1080 AM, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan, The Fan Sports Network, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, and YouTube. Good morning. Happy Monday, everybody. A lot to get to here in the second hour of the radio program. Doing a little backwards this morning, but we had booked this guest on Friday, so I just wanted to leave it there.
Yeah, why not?
We originally booked our guest, Eric Gunderson, of Blazer Banter, the Blazer Banter Substack. You can find him on Twitter, at Blazer Banter. Gundy giving the hot takes.
He's pro-Young Hansen. We needed him to answer to his tweets. What's going on here, Gundy?
Yeah, he's buying up all your Young Hansen stock as a big that can move the basketball, as we see in the playoffs. So it originally started us just like, hey, let's get Gundy on and have right. fun on Monday, because there might not be a lot of big things happening in sports.
And then it got brought up on a podcast where the agent of the player was telling the owner of the team, why don't you play him? He was like, I'm not going to do it, man.
Oh, and then we got coaching news, too. Yes. There's some more names. We got an old familiar face left his post to be the head coach again.
Come on back, man.
So joining us now on a timely interview is Eric Gunderson again, Blazer Banter Substack. Good morning, Gundy. How much stock have you accumulated between Friday and now of Young Hansen LLC?
I mean, there's a lot of sellers these days, so you know, it's pretty easy to buy it at a pretty cheap price. You know, yeah. I mean, it was funny. That interview was hilarious. Yeah, man. I mean, I know it's definitely a minority opinion these days to still be high on Hansen, but I mean, I do think he still has. I think he has some skills, and I think a lot of stuff defensively that he's got to learn is all like mental stuff. I think he can get there. It's just like he's got to learn this game. But I do think he has a great feel still, and I think when you're watching the playoffs, guys that have high feel are succeeding when, you know, the scouting reports are super tight and dialed. But, you know, it's going to be a long time before Hansen's seeing the floor in the playoffs. I know that much.
Well, let me ask you this, Gundy, because I'm curious. I saw your tweet and I just started laughing because everybody's responding to you and everybody's yelling at each other about Young Hansen stock, right? Now, the one area that I will grant you, because every time I've seen him step onto an NBA floor, it's like he looks slow. It doesn't look like there's no impact that's anywhere near the short-term future. The one thing that I will grant you, Gundy, is the basketball savant that you are. You watch G League tape. You watch G League highlights. You watch G League games. I don't. I've never watched a G League game in my – actually, that's not true. The Scoot Wemby game I did watch one time. Outside of that, I haven't seen it. So when you're seeing him play at obviously a lower level, what is it about the highlights that you watch that gives you that hope that maybe some of the people – that the fears that people have about when he steps onto the NBA floor won't be quite as large?
I mean, the first thing that stands out is that, I mean, he's a great screen setter, which I know is like a, you know, a really, you know, people be like, okay, yeah, that's easy. But like, I mean, he really makes impact. And then like when he rolls, it's almost like he's creating space in the lane, almost like a fullback and like a guy that can drive like right behind him to get to the rim. And his passing is super, super strong. His post moves are improving. I think all those things, I really like that. When I watched him in the G League playoffs, they were, you know, teams were forced to double team him and try to get the ball out of his hands and make someone else beat them, which to me, if these teams in the G League are showing that respect to him, he's got to be doing something right if you're getting double teamed. And so, like, those are signs to me that, like, it's not – all is not lost with the kid. And also, too, like, he's a kid. He is learning a completely new language. He's learning a completely new game. And, like, I think one of the things that, you know, was slowly being, you know, known is, like, this guy didn't have to box anybody out in China. This guy didn't have to chase out shooters to the three-point line in China and rotate because they weren't making threes like even G League players do. And so, like, I think a lot of his game is – a lot of what is happening right now is learning the speed of the game and where actions come from. I mean, he's – I don't think he's, like, any slower than Donovan Clingan. I just think Clingan has played more high-level basketball – and knows where attacks are going to come from and where, you know, where a drive is going to be or where a guy on the backside where you can anticipate. And anticipation is such a big part of being a good big man. And I think that is going to come with time and reps. But I think the G League is a good place to learn that, especially against quicker players. But, yeah, it's going to be a while. He still needs to work on stuff. And this is a huge summer for him. This is his first – you know, full summer as an NBA player in an NBA program. And I'm excited to see, you know, how he looks coming into next year. Like I am still intrigued by his talent. And even though, you know, yeah, he looked bad this season, but I think also too, with young players, a lot of times, like with Scoot, it'll look bad before it's going to get better. And I think that's something to remember about young players.
I cannot believe on May 18th we are talking about Jan Hansen. I don't know what that says about all of us, but I love that it's happening. Now,
I just love the take because Gundy is setting himself up for the – if this turns out to be a situation where he gets good, Gundy is going to have the ultimate last laugh
on everybody. Look, I want to move on because there's other stuff that actually happened. I didn't think there would be, but there was. And so before I do that, I just want to ask very quickly – so if we sign Rob Will or don't sign Rob Will, like, he needs to learn the game. Give me the there has to be a deadline on this. This can't be a 9-year open-ended take and he pops in like year 8.
5-year-old Neil O'Shea window. Give it time.
Is it 2 more seasons? Like, you think we see it pop in 2 more seasons and then it's bust or no bust type stuff?
I think you got to start seeing some growth in his game, you know, I think starting next season.
Okay.
I think you do have to start seeing it. Like, he's got to have some level of productivity. Look, if Rob comes back, there's still going to be a lot of games where he won't play. So, which means that should be opportunities for Hansen to play. I do think if this team wants to be take a next step, I do think they need to keep Rob, though. Like, I think that is a non-negotiable. And I think Rob, too, like, great feel for the game, good passer out of the pick and roll. And that's also, too, something I'd love to see Donovan Clingan develop, because I think when teams sell out on Denny or when they were double-teaming Scoot, like, there was just not a whole lot there. And so, like, they've got to be able to make some plays when, you know, these guys are getting double-teamed.
Yeah. Eric Gunderson, our guest here, Blazer Substack, Blazer Banter is where you can find him on social media.
All right, a lot of talk, Gundy, about we're going to lose the Portland Trail Blazers to the Seattle Super Blazers or maybe the Kalamazoo Kazoos.
Oh, yeah.
We got a cheap owner who doesn't travel two-way, guys, and won't buy us T-shirts. I'm assuming you watched the interview with Kellerman and Rich Paul over the weekend and some in-depth stuff that we really, I mean, outside of the press conference really for Dundon and some written interviews, we haven't really got a chance to hear from him. I'm curious what you made of what he said, and did it settle any of the fears that you have?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, he comes across pretty likable in the interview. You know, obviously he was saying that it was, I think he was talking about the two-way players being a distraction. I don't think that's necessarily like why they're there. Like, obviously they're helping the team to like go through walkthroughs and to be someone that other guys can work out against and things like that. I think he also, the admission that like, he just didn't understand what he was getting into and that is different from hockey, I thought was a good admission of humility. And so, I thought the interview was interesting. There was some, you know, some odd tangents in it for sure. But like, I came away feeling good, and he talked about the arena, and it seemed like, again, he was, you know, using the references to Carolina and how everyone thought they were going to move it. And it's like they worked out a deal. And I think what's happening right now between the city and the Blazers is a negotiation, which is exactly what happened in Raleigh when they got, you know, the arena renovated and things like that. So, you know, of course there's still, until the vote gets done, of course there's going to be some anxiety though, on whether it gets done or not, but it doesn't seem like he's like pushing it. And one of the other things too is like, you know, relocation is complicated, and it's also, I think, the underlying thing is there's a fee.
<There's>
right. and so, like, he clearly doesn't seem, you know, very keen on paying money
yep.
for no reason. So I think he really does want to keep the team here. I just think it's on, you know, the city now to actually make sure that happens.
Yeah, we'll get to the audio clips when we get done with you, but I think you're so right of, like, people just overlook the fact, like, the same people that want to call him this big cheapskate are just not talking about that he's going to have to pay money.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
If he wants to relocate a franchise to an arena that he doesn't own, and he'll have to kind of be at the whims of another city. Now, let me ask you this. I'm just kind of curious with Tom Dundon and kind of the narratives about him, and I've texted with people off the record about it, other media members in the market and stuff. And I certainly wouldn't try to act like it hasn't been evident or we haven't seen elements that are cheap. He admittedly himself will just tell you, like, I think there's ways to save a couple bucks. And maybe that's a big deal in the NBA. Maybe it ultimately will prove not to be a big deal. But what have you made of just, there just seems to be a weird thing about this. For most of my lifetime, it's been, they're going to leave. And it's like people take turns writing the same story and have for my entire life. And so, like, if they sign a lease, I think we're going to, on the show, celebrate a party and kind of laugh at everybody that's been writing about it. I'm kind of curious your just general thoughts of, like, why this forever is just going to be a story. Like, even if they signed a 25-year lease, I feel like somebody in year four of that lease would be like, why that lease might not be such a sure thing.
Not ironclad.
Click on my article to read why.
You know, I do think, look, as much as, like, we love Portland, we love where we live, there is a bit of an inferiority complex around here, about the city, where people just around here just love to, you know, shoot it down, even though they all live here too. And it's like, I don't know, I don't really get it. Like, I don't know what they gain from it, the self-deprecation, but not in a funny way. It's like this anxiety thing. And they also know that, I think, Portland fans are, like, they are worried about it. And sports fans do worry about potentially losing the team. So, you know, I think it's just always going to be a well, and it kind of also aligns with, like, a lot of the narratives about Portland big picture wise, where it's like, oh man, like, I can't believe this. It's just another sign that the city is failing and all this stuff. And it's like, people just love to be sad. I mean, we I think that's also something about some part of it. We always love to find a way to be like, no, this is, it can't be this.
We can't have nice things. I've been saying it for like 5 years now. This is why.
I agree. You're totally right, Sprague.
Just annoying.
Last one I got for you, Gundy. I'm excited for this offseason. I think one of the things in change of ownership, at least it has given me hope that I think we'll have some fireworks this summer. And I, not to say that Jody was never capable of doing that, but we certainly got kind of a blueprint of let's just run it back, kind of same team, pretty similar look year after year. I do expect big moves. Are you with me? Are you thinking this is a fireworks summer for Portland?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think Dundon, you know, clearly is very competitive. And, you know, I think one of the good things about him is that, like, you know, in the national media and a lot of fans of Western Conference teams with this Oklahoma City, San Antonio Western Conference Finals are like, woe is us. Is anyone ever going to beat them? Is this going to be the conference finals for the next 7 or 8 years? And I think Dundon doesn't care about that. I think Dundon's like, nah, let's line it up and let's play. And mm-hmm. so I think that's one of the things I like about him, is that his competitiveness. And so, I do expect there to be some big moves. Obviously, I think my caution is, make sure it's the right one. If you're going to put chips on the table, like these draft picks and stuff like that, because, you know, I know that these are out in 2028 and 2029 and all that stuff. But one of the reasons why Oklahoma City is Oklahoma City is they had those other picks from other teams and were able to take more shots at the apple in the draft. And so for a market like Portland, you don't want to just give that up unless you're getting something that is truly special in return.
Final one for you there, Gundy, because we appreciate the time early. I know you got a busy day ahead of you. Just the Stein and Hyken stuff have come out about coaches and names being thrown out. I don't know when they'll announce it. I assume it feels like they're kind of close to making an announcement. We got names out there. Jared Dudley, Steve Hetzel, Micah Norrie from Minnesota. And then one of the interesting ones that emerged is we had somebody leave the lead assistant job at a pretty nice place that Steve Kerr and Steph Curry, to throw his hat back in the ring and say, I want to go back to Portland, walk Tear down, Tear Bear, Terry Stotts. Oh, yeah. Where would you be right now of the names you've heard? Like, I don't know how to separate the assistants because we've never seen them be largely head coaches, but like Terry Stotts being back in the equation and where you're at with the coaching search.
I mean, hey, I love Terry Stotts. I think too, this team, you know, half court offense, they could use a guy who's a great offensive tactician in Terry Stotts. Now, I do want to say, I still think it would be kind of bad karma for the basketball gods if they did not bring Tiago Splitter back, but it does seem like they're probably not going to do that. I guess of all the other guys, I mean, I'm into the idea of Mike Inouye. Chris Finch is, I think, one of the best coaches in the NBA to learn from. But, I mean, the Terry thing is intriguing. So, yeah, there's a lot of names. And then Steve Hetzel, Summer League champion. I mean, come on, guys. Blazers Summer League legend. That's also, a factor here. So, yeah, no, but the names, I mean, when you're interviewing like 30 people, you're going to find your way to some good names, I think, eventually.
We'll get you out of here. I like what you said there, although I have an admission with you. I've lived my whole life with the belief, and I think I've given up the idea and belief in basketball gods. I think I'm a sports atheist now. The Mavericks winning the lottery and the Wizards winning the lottery have not given me any faith that sports gods or basketball gods specifically are real. I think I'm out. I'm a basketball atheist.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty awful to give the Mavericks the number one pick after doing the stupidest thing
we can't
we've
be doing
seen
this.
In a long time.
OKC steals a team Harper, and they're getting nothing but MVPs?
Yeah,
come on.
Right. Oklahoma City's reigning supreme, three different versions of it.
They're
what are
the
we doing
devil reincarnated. Come they keep on. Getting rewarded, man.
Find his Substack, give all his hot takes. He got things like, hey, I'm buying all the Yong Hansen stock.
If you
up.
Got stock, he'll buy it from you right now.
And he's one of my favorite ball knowers out there, even when I don't agree with him. He's a good friend of the program. Eric Garcia Gunderson, Blazer Banter Substack. Thank you, Gunderson. We appreciate the time.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, there we go. Eric Gunderson with his takes on all things Blazer-related, Dundon, Yong Hansen, the coaching search, you name it.
I disagree strongly on the Yong Hansen take, but it's always good to hear differing views, and who knows who ends up being right there. It's a massive summer for him. I think he also highlighted the main issue in the same interview, where if they want to be competitive right now, who needs to be back next year? Robert Williams. And if Robert Williams is back next year,
how many minutes is Young going to get
Young
to really
Hunt's
prove?
Young Hunt is not going to play. You're not going to play
get
three
like
centers.
10 minutes a game. But that's what we're
exactly.
looking at. Yeah. What can you do in 10 minutes?
Whose minutes is he taking away? Klingon's or Rob Williams? Because you're not playing them on the floor at the same time.
That's a fair
so
thing
it's just
to
that
ask.
Highlights the entire issue that we are facing, where on the one hand, he needs playing time to get better. On the other hand, we're in a win-now mode, and we don't have the playing time for him.
Well, we'll get to the Dundon audio. We pulled it from the podcast, at least the big ones, and we got all the clips that we're going to play. He did the random interview, which, by the way, side note, I mean, the lighting on that podcast.
Can't see a damn thing.
What is that?
I
understand mood lighting, but like with them, Dundon I could see just fine. By the way, wearing a Rip City hat, not a Whalers hat.
He was wearing a Rip
maybe
City hat.
Maybe he's 10 toes down in Portland now.
He was not
now.
Wearing a Kalamu Kazoos hat. There were no kazoos on that hat anywhere.
The theory about the hat he's wearing and the subliminal messages. Maybe Rip City means he's getting that money.
For a cheap guy who appears to wear the free hats that people give him, I think reacting to a Whalers hat might have been a little premature.
But again, we're going through negotiation stuff. Yeah. That being said, we'll get to the audio part of this. I have come to the conclusion, I don't know how big or not big the swing they're going to take is this summer. Maybe they add a guy and we're like,
yeah, that's it, huh?
Yeah, and I think guys like you are going to poo-poo the team, and I get it. I think I'm sitting right now in a spot of like, you're not catching the two teams that are tipping off tonight in one season. It's just not happening. Can you jump to be one of the top five or six teams in the West next year? Give me that. Give me that, and then like start tweaking as you go, because the idea that just you're one move away, it's a little too far-fetched to play that game. You need to be sitting more in the, not to pick up a name we all dislike, Neil Olshay, but like you're willing to make the move. You're winning 50 games, 49 games, you're in the mix, but are you going to make that one move tweak that could put you over the top? You got to make that move. They have to go about it that way. Trying to catch them in a year or 2 years.
Right.
I just don't know how feasible that is, especially the team in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, this was a debate that happened across the weekend because a lot of comments came out from Minnesota fans of, like, hopelessness of how do we make a move that puts us – the way that series ended, you don't feel like you're anywhere close to beating San Antonio, let alone OKC. And I thought Sam Quinn of CBS had a great point where basically it was like – if you're not just going to give up and fully tank, which isn't really going to be a thing, maybe going forward, right? It's not feasible.
Yeah.
Not sitting on your hands is dumb. Like, you should try and get yourself within a distance of, hey, if we get into a 7-game series with them and one of their guys goes down with a calf strain, can we capitalize? Yeah. Like, getting into that, you're never going to match them. You're never going to be able to be better than them. You're not going to beat them in the regular, like, it's just not going to happen from a win-loss records perspective in the regular season. But getting within striking distance and finding matchups that maybe could give those teams problems is how you should handle your offseason.
Let's roll on hour number two. We got Tom Dunn in audio. He did the interview podcast with Max Kellerman and Rich Paul. We'll get some clips to you coming up next. Dirt and Sprague, hour two rolls on 105.1 The Fan.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I could see this going a little long into the 45 segment. I don't know if Dirt has it on his show sheet, but would you be upset if your superstar athlete congratulated an entire team with 8 minutes left in the game?
Yes.
That was one of the more bizarre things I've ever seen in my life in sports.
Not my baby Jordan anymore.
Like, wait a minute.
Baby Jordan nickname is gone.
I saw it, I'm like, is he dapping up the whole team right now?
Down by 40 on his own
floor? I know you're getting worked, and this game has been a blowout, but damn, dude, 8 minutes left?
Come on, man.
Tom Dundon spoke to Max Kellerman and Rich Paul. We'll play these clips in just a second. Just want to remind you guys here on a beautiful Monday morning. Hello, Dirt and Sprague here hanging out with you. That on June 23rd, that's just a little over a month away.
Yes, it is.
Toyota presents the Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms Golf Club. The afternoon round is sold out, and we have four, five morning rounds left available.
Yeah, if you want to play, basically do it this week, or they're going to be gone. If you wait past this week, my guess is the thing will be sold out.
You can go to 1051thefan.com and click on the Fan Golf Classic logo to sign up. We'll have Matt's Barbecue. We'll all be hanging out at the infamous Angels Envy Bourbon Par 3. And the Fan Golf Classic is presented by Toyota. It's also brought to you by Vulcan Design and Construction, Henderson and Daughter Windows and Doors, George McCoy at Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, Battery Exchange, Maestro, Dobell Tequila, your neighborhood restaurant group, Philbrook Law, 1-800-DIVORCE, Roto-Rooter, Ely Galmez Cal, and Window Nation. Now let's get to our Tom Dundon on a podcast interview, huh? How about that?
Tommy D talking, and it's usually an impactful thing for him because we'd never heard from the previous owner at all, and so anytime he opens his mouth, it kind of separates himself from the previous group, and it provides insights into a guy who has been discussed and debated and yelled about constantly for the last handful of weeks. To get it straight from the horse's mouth. I'll also give you one underrated part of this podcast that won't come up in any of the audio.
Yeah.
One of the concerns about him as an owner is that he is cheap. Like, one of the stereotypes that exists in an athletic survey in the NHL is he's the most hated owner by NHL agents because he nickel and dimes and he, you know, works around the edges and all of that, and the agents hate dealing with him. Who hosts this podcast?
Rich Paul, Max Kellerman.
Who's maybe the most powerful agent in the entire NBA.
Rich Paul is certainly in the conversation.
Who was the one that set up the interview? If you listen to the entire thing, you catch it was a Rich Paul setup. He met Tom Dundon at the NBA Combine. Dundon flew into the Combine.
Yeah, that was the report. He went to the Combine to shake hands and meet people.
Like, hey, I'm new here. Let's get to know everybody. And he had some, you know, one-on-one conversations with Rich Paul while he was there. Rich Paul and him, according to the way they talked to each other on the podcast, hit it off. They saw eye to eye on a lot of things, and he invited him onto the podcast. And so I just thought that was important to point out. Agents are going to hate him. They won't work with him. Well, the biggest one in the NBA immediately offered to have him on his podcast. And I believe they said during the podcast that's the first time they've had an NBA owner on their podcast.
I don't believe they have. It's not
pretty
a very
prolific guys.
It's not like a they haven't been going for a very long time.
No, it's not a long-standing show, but still, Max Kellerman and the most prolific agent in the NBA having him on. That's a noteworthy thing for me that won't get talked about in the audio.
Well, I think the one part you're right on, and look, this doesn't have to mean everything, but I, as a sports fan and somebody hosting a show, I just kind of find it refreshing that we have an owner who's willing to do this.
What's the vision? What do you want to do?
Well, I mean, look, you don't have to like all of him, and the start of it's been very controversial. I understand that part of it, but like, we get caught up too much in, if the owner doesn't care, we complain about it. And if the owner cares, they're too hands-on. Like, it's hard for you to really pinpoint, like, what are you looking for here? Like, I don't want a Jerry Jones type.
Right.
But I do like having a Mark Cuban, Ishbia, I'm kind of a fan, I want to win, I care greatly guy.
I know you're competitive.
Or gal, didn't matter, right? I want somebody that cares.
Yes, you're impacted by winning and losing as an owner, not just a spreadsheet and how much money did we make this month.
Yeah, and also like, or I'm uber rich because I'm sitting on an estate and I write a blank check if you need a kitchen in your facility, but I largely don't really care to the point to ever communicate with the community.
Right, there's no sense of urgency.
Like, I he's not perfect, but as somebody who follows this team, it was nice to listen to and watch.
Agree completely.
That he was willing to do the sit-down interview. One thing on the combine, we'll get to all the cuts here. We got five cuts that we didn't pull that I thought was actually funny was his take on the combine.
Yes, how useless they are. And I couldn't agree more with him. I'm like, yeah, dude, that's, yeah.
Well, he basically acknowledges it's a good place to meet people and get to know other people around the league because all the movers and shakers are there. But then he was talking about the workout. And I'm paraphrasing, but he was like, yeah, I mean, like, they have actual tape of games, right, but because they jump 40 inches and have this time at this station, we're now going to elevate them? It's stupid. I loved hearing that. I'm like, thank you. Amen, brother.
Wait, you're telling me a cone drill is not a part of playing in the NBA, and how fast can you get from cone one to cone two to cone three to cone four?
It's unbelievable.
That's the only reason I'm drafting you in the first round.
All right, so let's get to some of these cuts here from the Rich Paul Max Kellerman podcast. What's the name of the pod? Is it
Game Over?
Game Over. Thank you. Yeah. I forgot to write that down. Here was Tom Dundon on the t-shirt dilemma. Boy, we were hot and bothered.
Where's my t-shirts?
That we weren't getting free t-shirts in the playoffs. Here's Tom Dundon.
Maybe the team psychologist can come tell me why I'm like this, but I agree with you. It just seems so obvious to me that you should do it this way. And then sometimes like this t-shirt thing, I wasn't trying to save money. I just kind of thought t-shirts were kind of silly.
The t-shirt thing is, when you got there, the t-shirts for the fans were laid out on the seats, right? And you got rid of that?
No.
What is it?
No. What happened was they called me. We made the play-in game or made the playoffs, and they called and said, it was a play-in game, I think. I don't know. Maybe it was a playoffs. They said, hey, do you want to do t-shirts? And I was like, no, let's do towels. It was that long of a conversation because in Carolina, we do towels and it's awesome. Like the arenas, they're all waving them. Well, I got to the Portland game. No one waved any towels. So we tried to get t-shirts for the next game. I didn't know t-shirts were such a thing because I hadn't thought about the fact that in hockey, we've got jerseys. Everybody wants to wear their jersey. And so they don't want t-shirts because they got their jerseys.
Right. But
so
in basketball,
it didn't
not
cross
the case.
My mind.
Yeah.
I just look.
Went exactly how we thought it would. It wasn't some decision made on a spreadsheet let's save $16,000.92.
I want this to be evidently, I like him abundantly clear. Like, I know he's cheap.
Yes, he acknowledges openly throughout the interview how cheap he is.
We act as if he is like a villain looking out a glass window, batting his fingertips together, going, yes, save me money on no t-shirts.
Comparing them to the major league owner who is stripping everything down and you don't have hot water anymore.
Well, he's right. Like, I watched Carolina Hurricane games this postseason. They're waving their towel. Now, you'd have to help me here. Because one of the games, who did Carolina just beat? Was it Philly?
They just beat Philly. They just swept Philly.
Who did they place in the first round?
Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Thank you. One of the Ottawa games I watched, the whole arena is waving their towel. The towel I saw at our Blazer game, did they look smaller than the hockey towels to
it's
you
hard
guys?
Hard to tell that on screen. I can't. I did see the towels in person because I was at game three. I can attest to the fact that not a single person waved them.
But were they waveable or were they too small? Were they more a rag than a towel?
They felt a little more raggy, but I also don't know how big the towels are. I have a Giants World Series towel that Rob brought me back from one of the Royals Giants World Series games, and it's not that big. So I don't know how big the general waving towel is, but to the point... It was on the tiny scale, and also people were stealing the towels off of the seats.
We also laughed at the shirt thing because, as we pointed out, people bring their own outfits. They either dress super nice or they wear their sports jerseys. A lot of people don't wear those t-shirts anyway.
Just
much ado about nothing, in my opinion.
Yes.
Here is Tom Dundon on the idea of being the cheapskate.
I mean, actually, I'm going to use what you said because I hadn't thought about it like that that's what's confusing is, you know, like my hockey team's been over the cap many times. They were the lowest in the league. They were at the floor when I bought them. You can go over the cap in hockey. If you have a hurt player, you can replace them. So I've been over the cap multiple times because there was a rule that allowed you to go over the cap. And at the same time, when I walk out of a room, I turn off the lights. And so that my friends make fun of me all the time. They tell me how bad I am at being rich. And, you know, like, I just don't want to waste money. I want to invest it. I'll have as many masseuse. I'll have the best food. We're going to take care of the players because it helps you win. It's part of the deal. Some of the stuff about how we're going to run the business, you know, Portland spends $100 million more dollars a year on their business than the Hurricanes do, not including players. The Hurricanes, since I bought the team, have the first or second best record in the league. So I'm just not going to waste $100 million just because somebody wants to write our article calling me cheap. I'm just not going to do it. And so it's hard because I don't think about a budget when it comes to the playing team and how to make sure we win.
I think some people, Dirt, are going to wave and sound the alarms. We'll get to the two-way and the hotel thing. He talked about that. He was asked about that, the luxury tax and the Moda Center situation itself. I think people are going to sound the alarms on some of that, of like, oh, the hockey? Hockey has nothing to do with the NBA. They're so different. And I'm like, my position on this hasn't been like not to be worried whatsoever. I understand the concern. Also watched and followed basketball most of my life. I get it. Like, they're more pampered and higher paid than hockey athletes.
Right.
My thing and where I sit, and I think you heard this throughout the podcast, some of my big theme takeaways from the Dundon stuff was learning. And I've just always been saying, like, he's been in this a couple months and we're instantly writing these big think pieces as if it's a done deal of who he is as an owner and what his tenure meant as an owner. And I just, like, can we allow any amount of room of learning? It's one thing to sound some alarms or to say, this seems a little concerning, let's keep an eye on it. There's just people open-endedly telling you, this is the definition, this is what it is, it's never going to change. And I've just been sitting of like, yeah, some of that's not great, or that's not great, but maybe he'll learn from some of this and not do that. At least can we allow the time to see if that's the case?
Yeah, I think that's been the sentiment that we've been trying to bring across. It's just simply that we don't know how this is going to go. And he is, you can tell me that running an NBA team and NHL team are different, and you're not wrong. The revenues are different. Your point on culture is totally spot on. Like, I get it. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. I also, though, just simply chuckle at the idea, like, since he bought the team nearly a decade ago, the Carolina Hurricanes were nowhere, and they have now been a playoff team.
Spending no money, by the way,
no
in
money.
That sport. I know
they had won a cup, you know, years earlier, but outside of that, the Hurricanes had no identity. They were in a very similar, like, it was almost eerily similar to the situation that we're in. An organization that did something long ago, hasn't accomplished anything in the long term, or in the short term, I should say. Their arena needs an upgrade. Are they going to move? Like, all of this stuff literally happened when he bought the Hurricanes. As somebody who follows hockey, I can tell you that.
Yep.
And they've now been to the playoffs 8 straight years, and they're one of the best run organizations in the league. And so that's the one thing that I fall back on. I'm not saying just because you're good in the NHL, you're guaranteed to be good in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It's just simply the idea that he bought a team, he's turned them around, and he's successful. So he clearly knows what he's doing in some way, shape, or form when it comes to being an owner.
Yeah, you're right. And look, I totally agree. And I know why people say it, especially the ones that cover this team and this franchise, like why they are quick to point out, it ain't hockey, man. And like, I get it. It isn't. But my thing is, like, him learning just in hockey, if he had come in and the Carolina Hurricanes were dog crap and he wasn't spending in hockey, sound the four-alarm fire alarm right now.
Right.
And it's not to say that hockey is basketball. It's just simply point out, like, he's clearly a guy that has learned in sport.
He's evolved as time has gone on. He's competitive.
He's coming in with some kind of resume. I mean, imagine an owner that literally had never owned anything and never experienced any of what sports has been. So I find it all very fascinating how he's been covered. And we obviously know there's leaks within the organization that have come out. We'll talk about some of the other stuff with the other audio clips.
Sure. I just thought it was telling that almost outside of the hotel thing, which I know we'll get to the audio, every other thing that a fan that we haven't had issues with, but fans have had issues with, he's acknowledged he's already flipped positions on. The t-shirt thing was a big deal for a lot of people. And he said, look, I just didn't get it. I'm coming from hockey. We wave towels. That's how we do it here. Like,
I also don't care.
I don't
it's
either. But I'm just, my point
matter.
Is simply to the fans who cried to the moon over that yeah. one. What did he try and do for game two? Or the idea of sending the two-way players. What did he do for game five back in San Antonio? Like, he's already learned and evolved in multiple ways as an owner, and he's only owned the team for 6 weeks.
Let's get to those other audio clips on the other side. Dirt and Sprague back with more Tom Dundon audio on The Fan.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Your neighborhood restaurant group poll question brings The Fan on Twitter every day, and dinner tonight at one of their five locations, San Diego's Big Chickens, Reverend's Barbecue, 808 Hawaiian, and Lorehurst Market Steakhouse. The poll question today is, of the four candidates, which one would be your choice for Trailblazers head coach? You've got Mike Inouye, the assistant in Minnesota.
That was the new one over the weekend.
He is a fun one. You should look into Mike Inouye. He's got a lot of character. He would be a really fun choice. I don't know if he's good, but he'd be a really fun one.
Sure.
Steve Hetzel, who coached the G League champion Blazers once upon a time. The Remix, as they're known on the streets.
We're Summer League Dynasty is what we are.
Yep, we could be coming back to the forefront with him. Jared Dudley, former NBA player. He's been assistant now for a few seasons. And old Tear Bear, Terry Stotts, according to Mark Stein, left his post at the Warriors to put his hat back in the ring. He wants to come back to Portland and Bend as often as he can.
He's coming home.
So Terry Stotts being a head coach for the second time in the last two coaching cycles.
Bringing him back would be really funny.
Would be hilarious. But you can vote at Dirt and Sprague on social media. More Tom Dundon audio. We didn't get to all of it there. We have five cuts that we pulled that we thought were the most timely or, you know, topic worthy. Tom Dundon has talked about luxury tax. He's mentioned the trade. He was asked about spending, right? He's being cheap. He is cheap. He was asked about luxury tax, which is a big price tag to pay in the association.
Look, on the Joe called me, and I don't even know if it was allowed, but he called me at the trade deadline, which technically I didn't know. We didn't own the team yet. And he had a deal, actually two different deals, but one in particular where we would have gone into the tax and it would have been whatever, $20 million. And, you know, I was fine with it. I'm like, I want to run the business properly, but I want to win more than I want to make money. And that seems kind of obvious if you're in this business, right? Winning's the only reason you do it. Why would you buy a team? And so obviously there's a lot comes with staying in that tax in the NBA, right? They've made the rules in a way that it's complicated, but to go in strategically because you can pick up a young player or have a chance to win, I got to believe, well, we would definitely do it. And I got to think most people would. I don't know many owners that wouldn't do that. And I don't think we would operate any differently. I hope we're in a position where going in the tax means we have a chance to win. And if we have a chance to win, the tax is irrelevant.
I think that's a perfect summation of why there's not a big issue for me on any of this stuff, is because you can complain all you want about the cutting of costs off of the floor and the random things that will or will not be there anymore that used to be there. Mm-hmm. The comps to guys, you know, like, you know, Fisher for the A's, like, it's not there. He spends to win on his team and on his players. And as long as you're doing that, ultimately as a fan, isn't that the ultimate thing that matters? And at the end of the day, this is why all the arguments about being cheap. If your owner is an owner who is refusing to pay his players, mm-hmm. refusing to improve the roster, that you're essentially arguing he's only owning the situation as just a windfall of money that comes in and revenue sharing and media deals and all that stuff from owning the organization. And I don't care about winning, and I'm just using this as a vessel to make money. Those are the cheap, bad owners that you're terrified of. There's no indication that he's ever been that. He has not been that in Carolina. And there's no fear in my mind that he's going to be that in any way, shape, or form in Portland, because I believe his words when he says it. Like, I think winning is significantly more important than making money in his mind.
Here is Tom Dundon on the two-way guys. guys who it was reported by Hyken did not travel in the first road game of the first round, and then also the hotel issue.
Hey, checking out.
Checking out early. The staff members had to check out early. Here is Tom Dundon setting the record straight on those two things.
Some of the stuff that was blamed on money is actually not 100% true that I thought about the money. Like on traveling players, you know, I just made a mistake. I just don't understand the league. In hockey, we don't travel extra people because we're not on vacation. We're here to win. So we don't want the distraction. The NBA seems to live with those distractions. It's not how I think about it. So you sort of got to learn, you know, what's the differences between the two leagues. And, you know, the hotel story with the staff is an interesting story, I think, because normally when you travel, you get late checkout, right? In this case, in sports, it's usually like 5% and never comes up. We went because it was last minute going to Phoenix. There was no hotels. I guess Phoenix in March is a pretty popular place. So had trouble getting hotels, and the hotel really wanted us to be out early because they needed the rooms. And so they wanted us to pay for a second night. And so we did that for the coaches and the players, but we got them to let us leave at 1 o'clock, and I had a room at the hotel. I was there. So I'm like, lunch starts at 1:45. We have a huge ballroom with this really nice lunch for everybody. So I said, look, we'll do the players and the coaches. We'll stay. We'll pay the extra night for the staff. We've got this big ballroom with food. We'll go down there and work. And everyone was down there. I was down there. I actually learned a lot during that hour because I got to talk to some of the training staff, et cetera. Like, I would do it again. I think it's actually pretty stupid to think that people who are there to work, who are being fed, and 45 minutes later, they weren't in the lobby. They brought their bags down in the room right by where the bus was, right next to my bag. And we sat down there and talked. And, you know, if that's too hard for people, I'm not right for them. You know, like, I want that culture.
Now, I think I know what you're going to say, given your chuckling. But what I would already counter with, because I know what you're going to say, is this is an area that people will draw concern. Mm. They'll draw the cheapness thing. And they will say, all right, well, if you're going to learn, you better not do this anymore, because people will point out how those staff members impact the players and the happiness and the vibes. And, oh, you want your culture? Well, this is the culture of the NBA.
Right.
I found some of what he said there a little refreshing, of just like, yeah, I'm cheap, dude, and I'm feeding you, and you're getting paid to do a thing, and I'm hanging out with you. I'm not just like up in the penthouse not hanging out and talking to people. And again, I already know who the people are going to be. They're going to tell you what your take is about to be is wrong, because he better learn from this and learn quick. Otherwise, he's not going to get a single player to ever want to play in Portland again.
Well, I think what that story did is it highlighted a hunch that I think a lot of us have had, is that almost all of these negative headlines have come from probably disgruntled employees, right? People who are concerned about the future of their employment, and are we going to work here? And you're flustered, and you got a new boss. We have been through multiple new bosses.
Some of that was my takeaway as, like, well. It's like an organization sitting in uncertainty, and
yes,
people going, I don't know if I'm here.
Yes.
Oh my God, look what this guy's doing.
You're fearful, and he's got a reputation of cost cutting, and what does this mean for my, like, we've gone through multiple boss changes. It's not a comfortable thing. Was the new person going to come in and have the same view of our show as the last person did, right? And so I understand the uneasiness there. I just love how he was able to frame that in such a different way than it was originally spun. When it was originally spun, it was, we're making these people stand with their suitcases in the lobby hours upon hours because he's so cheap that he doesn't want to pay for a room for an extra couple hours. And he's saying, hold on, we're in the rooms until 1 o'clock. We have a lunch at 1:45 in a ballroom. I'm catering the lunch. I'm down here with you with my bag as well.
Yeah.
The framing of it could not be more different.
We didn't get that part of the story, did we, Dirk?
Did not get that part. It was just he's cheap. And everybody had to check out early, running around like chickens with their heads cut off. Oh, my God, the chaos that's ensuing.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know what, we have a lunch in 45 minutes. Why don't we just check out now?
He also got to talk and meet people.
And let's come down and shake hands and let's get to work. We got a game tonight. Like, we're getting ready to go to work. He could not have framed that in a different way than it was originally spun. And I'm sure some will still have issues with it, but it was a nothing burger to me originally, and it's even less so now after hearing his explanation.
We have one more clip we didn't get to there on the Tom Dundon, Max Kellerman, Rich Paul podcast, and that's on the Moda Center and the funding for the Moda Center. And Are they going to be the Seattle Superblazers, the Kalamazoo Kazoos? Where are they moving next? Tom Dundon sets the record straight, talks about that. We'll kick off the third hour of the radio program, Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.